I want you to share with people how you got to this, because it blew me away when you told me this.
And I like to keep my mouth open when guests tell stories. So I'm going to start now. I'm ready.
Guess what? I figured out that I think I listen with my mouth open.
I guess I do. I listen with my mouth.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
Bean, we have a special guest today, regenerative farmer Stacy Police. Are you ready?
That's the coolest title ever, regenerative farmer. I'm going to do that, call myself that. I'm ready. Also, I'm ready.
Hi, Bean.
Hi.
Bean, we have a special guest today.
No, I loved guesties. I feel like I learn a lot.
We do. Well, I don't want to hold her back because she has so much to share. I'm going to bring her in and have her play some cringe and delight. This is my good friend. She's become part of what makes Santa Barbara so full of love and light for me. She is an incredible author, educator, and regenerative farmer, Stacy Police. Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Thank you. I am so happy to be here with you today and meet Melissa.
And we both got the stripes memo.
Yeah. We do.
Perfect. I know.
And the pink
memo.
I
would like to just say that I wore this shirt for you, Stacy.
And I wore this shirt for you. Why did you wear that?
Strawberries on it.
Mine has strawberries, so it's my farming shirt.
Okay. That'll work. And I'm wearing, I felt the pink. I'm like, okay, what's she wearing? And I'm like, I'm going to go pink. But knowing me, I had to wear the collared stripe.
Well, it looks good.
So it was that mix between. Wow. Maybe I was channeling a little Melissa.
Yeah, I feel like you're a real combo of us two. Yeah. Mm.
She is. Well, Stacy,
to
really integrate you into the Bean podcast, we have to have you play Cringe or Delight with us to get us started. And really, this started as a way for us to catch up with each other. But it's turned into something that we like to do with our guests. So, Stacy. Yeah. If you think about this last week, something cringy, embarrassing, or something delightful.
I have something right floating on the top. I have something ready to go. I attended this beautiful summit that is the Giving List Women. And it was all about bringing together women who are doing philanthropies or projects that benefit women and girls. And the woman who organized it brought together the most amazing, incredible women. And there's a woman named Kimberly Crenshaw. And I'm trying to think of exactly. They coined the term, say her name, violence against Black women. She coined the term critical race theory.
Really?
And she coined the term intersectionality. So let's just start there.
Wow.
And then when she spoke in the morning on a small panel, her words were so beautiful and potent and urgent and clear. I just started crying immediately. Wow. So I was like, wow, this woman is a goddess. And I had an opportunity, I think it was later that night, it was such a long day, it doesn't even seem possible, to be at a small dinner that she was at. And I was so fangirl when I was introduced. I was kind of like, hi. And afterward, I was like, oh, my God. I just thought and I sat there one person away from her the whole dinner and did not make a stink about her. I did not say. So here's what I wish. I wish I'd said, oh, my gosh, thank you so much for the work you do. And you have made a huge impact on me. Thank you. Mm. So that's cringy. I felt like some ignorant white chick.
Can I just say that I believe it's never too late that you should send an email right now when you get off, not right now, and just say, I meant to say this and I just want to put it out there so that you know I feel this way. No response necessary.
Okay, guess what? What's the other one called besides cringe?
Delight.
What's the other one? Delight. I told Gwen, who organized the whole thing, about my cringe and within 24 hours, I had an email in my inbox. Kimberly, this is Stacy, the woman I told you about. She'd love to have you for a dinner. So let's plan it.
Oh, what?
Wow. That's so exciting.
What? Stacey, wow. That's amazing. And you know what? I mean, Kimberly sounds incredible. Obviously, amazing. We've all heard all of those terms. So to hear that that's the origin of those really important concepts is, I'm fangirling. And I know that when Kimberly comes to spend time with you, she's really going to be blown away by who you are, because you really embody so much of, I think, what a lot of these concepts is about. And we're going to talk about that today. But I really think you guys are going to vibe. I think it's going to be a girl crush both ways.
Oh, God, that is just like, be still.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm excited for you. I might just lurk around your house during that dinner and just be like, oh, I was in the neighborhood.
Yeah, maybe you'll come. Maybe you need to come. I don't know.
All right. Well, Bean, what do you got? Good. Can you top that?
No. And every time, I feel like this happens to me consistently. Like last week, you were like, I was in Bali finding my deepest desires in my soul. And now she's telling me this amazing summit. And I'm just going to come right out with it. Mine was just a cringe slash delight about how I don't know how to do anything in my house, but I'm taking a stand against that. And I patched some holes in my wall and I sanded them down and then I painted them, and I didn't do it very well, but I learned lessons and I'm just proud of myself for doing it. I'm embarrassed.
Why?
That's so big. That's big.
We don't know how to do anything. Home ownership is full of like fixing things. And my husband and I just don't. We hire out for everything. And I'm like, this is baloney. I can do this. I watched a YouTube video. I went to the hardware store. I bought the stuff. I did it. I didn't do it that well, but I still did it.
Bean, I'm proud of you. You know why that's a big deal? Because it's super empowering. I feel like sometimes I can get so reliant on TJ to do stuff around the house that it sometimes feels like, oh, you're not empowered anymore. You're kind of, you know, anytime you're relying on someone, even if you're calling a contractor, that's not really empowering. So I think that's a big one. And last week, I will have you know that your delight was that you fixed you painted a step. So we're on a theme.
See? I'm prepping my house because the big mitzvah is coming and you're coming. And so I'm doing small little chores instead of hiring them out.
I think it's great. I'm very proud of you.
Thanks.
It's a bigger deal than you think is what I want to say. It's a huge deal.
Thank you for your support. Yeah. It feels a little silly compared to your absolutely delightful story, but I appreciate your support regardless.
You know what? There's
all part of the package.
There's day-to-day life and then there's big life and they intersect. Yeah. All right. Well, mine is 100% delightful. I'm here with TJ in the Bay Area this weekend because our son Keegan had an amazing concert at this venue called the Sweetwater in Mill Valley, which is like a concert venue. It's like a club and a concert venue. And this high school band teacher is so cool that he had these kids form actual bands, like rock bands, and practice their instruments and their vocals through their own rock bands, and they named the rock bands and they've been performing all year.
Oh, I love that.
And they ended with this concert at the Sweetwater, and it literally felt like we were at a rock concert. And my sweet stepson got up there and he sang Nothing Really Matters. Nothing Really Matters, Nothing Else Matters. TJ's in the background. I can't get a Metallica song wrong. Nothing Else Matters. Oh. And he played guitar with his band. It was so awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. It was cute.
Well, I have chills because that song is my jam. It's powerful.
It's my favorite Metallica song.
Sandman, Enter Sandman.
This is news, Bean. I didn't know you were a Metallica fan.
I'm not. But TJ is a massive Metallica fan. And that one is their only ballad, I think. I don't know. He's in the background. He's going to be giving me dirty looks if I say these things wrong. Anyway, that was my delight. Thank you for listening. Stacey, we just need to get to you because you're too interesting.
Let's do it. Not.
But wait, I didn't hear your cringe.
Oh, do I have to do? But I don't think we. I don't. Okay.
Sometimes we throw it.
Oh,
in.
There's not. Okay, the rules give, don't
I have
that
one.
Way,
I have one. I have one. I have one. We got on the plane yesterday.
Okay.
And from Santa Barbara to San Francisco, and there was this lovely older gentleman sitting on the end of the aisle, and TJ and I went into our spots, and he struck up conversation, and you know we were talking to him for a minute. You guys, he didn't stop talking. That he asked us a question about, he had a story about himself to tell us. And it was endless. And then his wife ends up being Persian. And I say, oh, I'm Persian. That was the worst idea ever.
Because
then we started talking about a Persian New Year's party in Carmel where 400 people were at, and the nephew of the aunt of the uncle. I mean, he just wouldn't stop. And it was so, you know, you have that moment where you're like, okay, I am sacrificing my peace for someone else's need to talk about themselves and obviously connect. And like, where do you have a boundary and where do you cut it off? And TJ and I were both, I could just notice TJ was in this headspace too of like, how do we stop him from talking? Because we have 50 minutes on this plane to read our book or nap or whatever. And anyway, I pretended like something happened on the phone that TJ needed to look at and drew his attention over to me. But
that's the move. Right? Wow.
But we walked saying like, what happens in your headspace where you're not connecting to an individual to be able to receive back from them? Are they like, are they interested or not? You know, and you can just keep talking and talking and talking. That must be a nice place to live in your mind.
I thought it sounded lonely, to be honest, to me.
Yeah.
That's what I was vibing. Like, he sounds like a lonely guy.
Well, he has a beautiful Persian wife who cooks delicious food. So I don't think he's that lonely.
He needed some validation from life, I guess.
Okay. Well, Stacey,
all right, let's get down to brass tacks.
On that note, we
want to talk to you about so many things. We want to understand how regenerative farming became your life's purpose. We want to understand even what that is. But I think that for me, the reason that I really wanted to talk to you, besides you being such a good friend and someone that's so interesting for our listeners, is because so much of what you do and what I do intersect, which is not something that you would think. You don't think that an intuition coach and a regenerative farmer would have so much in common. But every time we talk, we really do. And I think it's because you do such a beautiful job articulating how this external practice of regenerative farming is also a life practice. It's an internal practice. And I really wanted you to tell that story and dive in. And I will let Bean ask the first question and then we'll just go from there. So Bean, I think I know what your first question is.
It's an obvious first question, which is basically, can you define what regenerative farming is and how you incorporate that into your lifestyle and regenerative living?
So what I'm going to tell you, what I understand it to be, is that we have understood in modern times, I'm going to say, that the land, the resources are there for the taking, and we just use it and use it and use it. And when it's not performing, we juice it with something that came out of a lab that can really juice it quick. And somebody possibly from a military base, you know, like from a defense system byproduct, if we can figure out, it's all about the national economy. If we can figure out how to use that excess material to turn it into chemical nitrogen, which is exactly what did happen after, I think it was World War II, that some of those products that were byproducts that were sitting in warehouses, they figured out how to use that in farming. DDT was, I think, a byproduct of napalm, and it worked beautifully. Because that's what they would do for deforestation in Vietnam so they could expose the enemy, right? And they started using it. And then they found out it was just killing people. And that took a lot of effort to get that to stop because they call this chemical farming thing the Green Revolution, which is kind of that backwards, you know, oxymoron thing. And so you might imagine these were not ideal for actually growing, even if they made short-term performance look good. So we made a big switch, you know, at that point. And it's all about, it's kind of like test tube farming in a way. And now what we're learning is that you can't really cheat Mother Nature. You can't fake it because it'll have long-term consequences. So what I understand regenerative farming to be is that which sees the soil as the primary location of all productivity. And that it's health, it's authentic health, that there's actually microorganisms, there's a whole nutrient cycle, there's a whole world in there that by amplifying, creating health, understanding and doing biomimicry in that way, rather than trying to short circuit it, you're giving back to the land what has been taken. And so we're on kind of a journey to repay a lot of loans we've taken over a long time. I consider it right now, the shortcut from my mind is give more than you take. Boom.
So we moved as a society and a culture towards this kind of chemical use in farming because we saw such an impact in terms of the volume of things that could be produced. And we're learning, obviously, all of the negative side effects. And so regenerative farming is really about becoming clear about the earth's actual process and facilitating the earth's process organically so that the soil becomes rich enough in nutrients that it does its own natural organic process to get rid of what needs to be out and to include what needs to be there. And not only is that good, I'm hearing, for the food we eat and for us, but that obviously has a positive impact on the climate and on our planet.
Yes, but it's a real, it's like moving the Titanic, you know, a ship, you know, it's a very slow process. Yep. And that's what I have found in this journey is how hard, and I remember Gloria Steinem saying that she thought just by exposing the injustice or inequality that it would just fix itself. Yeah. And that's been my naivete. It's like, hey guys, this is what's going on. There's so much money being made. Yes. There's so many profit centers that benefit by that. And so it's not actually in the best interest of the people, the food, the land. It's in the best interest of the high profits by the few.
And Stacey, what is the warning? If you had to say it in two sentences, what is the warning right now for the world if we don't pay attention to regenerative farming practices?
I mean, in 2018, when that on Black Friday, that climate report came out, it actually got through to me. And I'm not proud to say that was when it like really sunk in. Before that, it was kind of like, I love the environment. Don't litter, you know, thing, you know, whatever. I recycled.
What was this report?
Stuff.
What was
That's
the
where I am.
What was
it was the one that said
headline.
We're screwed. We're actually on track for devastation on the planet. It was really very clear terms. But I got very into climate activism and was working with psychological and emotional barriers to engaging with the climate because people knew about it. Some people knew about it, didn't want to talk about it. My friend group, nobody wanted to talk about it. I'd bring it up.
Why?
It's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. And it's like, well, Al Gore said it, inconvenient truth. And nobody wanted to talk about it. And these are women that are ass kicking, right, Maureen? You know my friend group. And it's like, they're doing big things and helping the world. And it's like, people are like, so should I sell my beach house? Or
is it also a feeling of half helplessness because it's such a big problem, but also half comfort. Like, I don't want to give up in my life what creates comfort for me. So the parts that I do have control over, I'm not willing to change because it changes my quality of life.
What about though, just becoming knowledgeable about the whole thing and then making decisions? I mean, I'm sort of where you were pre-2018, you know, I'm recycling, I care very much, don't litter, I'm there. But I would like to be more informed and then make decisions accordingly. I'm curious why all these empowered women shy away from it. I mean, obviously a lot of people do, which is why we are where we are today.
Yes. And so it doesn't have anything to do with intelligence, access to information, any of that. Good person, bad person. There is fear.
Scary.
Is an emotional barrier. Anger is an emotional barrier. Grief is an emotional barrier. Feeling impotent, like what you're saying. I feel so powerless. I mean, that's a bad feeling. But those are some of the reasons why. But also, there's been an active job by commerce, I would say. And what it is I'm looking for that higher level whereby our society isn't oriented around the dollar to the point where we sacrifice quality of life or health or well-being or some of these other things. And so there's so much motivation if your pursuit is the dollar to greenwash, distract, all these kinds of things. So it's not your fault. Depending on where your eyes are turned, your attention is, they don't want to scare you into not buying more shit. That's the bottom line. What ended up working for me was an opposite approach. I ended up coming to it ultimately in the passionate way I am through a very different path, I'll say. and it feels more effective.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's what I want to ask you about, is how you got here, because that story is fascinating. So your career has been in education. You also have a master's in psychology, a PhD in depth psychology. That's a different world that you were in prior to regenerative farming. And you have a really fascinating story about how everything switched over that has to do with a near-death experience. Yes. So tell us about that. I want you to share with people how you got to this, because it blew me away.
My mouth open. It is guest tell stories. So I'm going to start now. I'm ready.
Guess what? I figured out that I think I listen with my mouth.
I guess I do. I listen with my mouth.
So it's not like I recommend a near-death experience. It's not that I, you know. No. But I think there's ways, like little deaths we can have, which is that loss of an identity along the way. So that's what I want to start with. But I also want to say this morning when I was reflecting on my journey to this, I remembered, because, you know, what you've brought to me, Maury, is a much closer relationship with my own intuition, which has already been there, but you really helped with my, you know, any amount that I was still in the closet around that. But I remembered that I saw a psychic in 1992 who I would check in with once a year. And she literally, I lived in Los Angeles, I worked in television, and I was going to Pacific Graduate Institute in Santa Barbara, but she saw this large piece of land in Santa Barbara. She's like, I can see it because somehow whatever she said, I saw. It's this large piece of land. It's very green. It's going to be very important to your life. And I had no idea.
She pinpointed the location.
Yeah.
And Stacy and her husband Ron's ranch is a beautiful green oasis of life. So that is. That happened, but
and
anyway, back
I
to your
recently
story.
Looked through my notes, and I saw that I had gotten this really strong hit maybe a couple of years ago that I married the land. I actually felt married to the land. What? Don't tell Ron. But at any rate,
maybe he's also married. It's a throuple.
He knows.
Yeah,
guess what?
He is too.
Yeah.
What my journey essentially was that in the PhD program, we were studying something called liberation psychology, which looks at oppressed and marginalized populations. And that started in Africa and South America in the 60s and 70s. And bell hooks said, one of my, you know, mentor thinkers said that once you see oppression in one group, you cannot not see it in every other group that may be oppressed.
Oh. Yes.
So I would say that when I was learning about liberation psychology and the marginalization of people, on every page I saw children are oppressed in public schools. Children are marginalized and oppressed. Mm-hmm. And what I ended up naming my dissertation, it's the colonized child. We are colonized as children. It's like we're born, and I consider that like an indigenous child. We all come connected to the earth, connected to ourselves. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We learn through play. We learn with imagination. And what we choose to do in this culture is effectively colonize and overtake. So I'm going to use Indian schools as an example, and I do not mean to appropriate a concept or to minimize what that was, but it's a much diluted version of that, where it's like, you're going to wear these kind of clothes, you're going to sit in rows, you're going to, you know, your play equals not learning. All these things that we shift children's understanding, and it actually is a mini trauma, and it can be self-alienating because the truth is outside you, is what we're taught.
You said something I want to make sure we all understand, the concept of Indian schools. Are you talking about when Native children were being colonized through education?
And removed from their tribal families and sent to schools that the U.S. government set up to Americanize them. So they lost their internal known culture and connection. Absolutely. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Which is a huge, huge deal. But what I believe is the way we're educating, separating us from ourselves and our knowing and from nature. I think it's a huge ass deal. So I wrote that piece. And then what was interesting is I interviewed young people about their experiences in school to find out how public school may have, if it in fact is colonizing and how it impacts their well-being. And what they reported was that when there was a presence of the four C's, and I'll name them, care, connection, community, and choice. When there's a presence of the four C's, they actually remembered what they learned, their self-esteem and self-motivation were increased, and they remember what they learn. When those things are absent, they called it memorize, barf back, and forget. It created a sense of alienation, a sense of separation, a sense of meaninglessness, and it was just something to endure on the road to that higher thing, which at the time was college. Everybody goes to college. So it's basically you have to punch your card. It's horrible. It's painful. Just do it because this is how you do it.
Right.
And what was to me the final hurrah of proving that students are in fact colonized is that they start to believe it themselves. So that the ultimate is when they self-colonize. So they actually believed it was for their own good. That has been the move of a colonizing movement is that the colonizers, it's like, you know, we're doing it for you. You know, we're noble, we're civilizing savages here. Right. And it's the same language. So anyway, that happened. But students, when I would ask, well, what's going on with your teachers that they don't care for you? They don't connect with you. Oh, they all said it's not their fault.
Aww.
They are outnumbered, overwhelmed, and stressed
out. What year is this? Can I ask what year you did this?
2013 is when the student research happened. And then about 2014, 2015 is when I got really interested in doing that bigger research project with the teachers. And asked many of the same questions and interviewed each of them. And I learned that, guess what?
They are.
The four C's, they need that care.
The teachers. The teachers are missing the four C's.
Do I feel loved? Do I matter?
Yeah.
That connection. Do I have a relationship with students, with my admin, with my peers? You know? Community. Do I... The teachers. I mean, the students. It's like, do we share values? Are we a team here? And choice I always saw as, can I speak my truth to power? And do I have some agency here? So the students saw it that way. The teachers saw it that way. And so that was really impactful, that research. But what I started to see, because then I started to interview admin. Guess what? It was the same thing.
Oh, wow.
Everybody.
We all want the
same
thing.
So then I'm like, wait a second. Schools are ecosystems. They are filled with living beings that actually need positive inputs at every level in order to flourish and thrive. So that was like a wow. And there's such a thing as, let's say, a sustainable or a regenerative space in a classroom, in a school. And then I saw, wait a minute, at workplaces, wait a minute, in all places, in everywhere that anybody... There's living things. There are these ecosystems that can either be positive energy inputs or depleting energy inputs. And so that was a mind blow. So what I would say is in the summer of 2019, I was doing a lot of academic writing around that. But then in the summer of 2019, I actually started to address a major grief in my life. I had lost contact with my daughter, and I decided to really just face it and feel it. And, you know, I had been so close, and she's such an amazing person, and it was so painful to me, but I thought kind of pretending or working around the edges, not fully facing it, isn't to my benefit. I need to just really deal with this. So I spent the summer of 2019 just in my Airstream trailer, crying, writing, feeling, just owning, accepting, getting it, letting it in. And guess what? When I got through that feeling, all of those feelings, what came next was the losses I experienced with the kind of mother I had. She's great. Mm-hmm. She's got so many good things to her, but she wasn't like a nurturing person. And God bless. I understand why. And that led to a lot of forgiveness. But then very next thing was Mother Earth. Mm. It just was just waiting for me. Then one, then the other, then the other. And so I was grieving fully what we've done to Mother Earth. It was so painful that summer. But I developed symptoms and bladder symptoms and in this process, and I started to self-medicate with supplements over the counter. And what I didn't know is that those are as powerful as anything, and you should not be self-medicating endlessly. And I was taking something that had an herb called Uva Ursi, which is a liver detox herb that you should only use for about 5 days. Ultimately, I took a triple dose and went into liver failure and was rushed to the hospital and ended up in ICU for about 5 days. And during that time, I had a near-death experience. Mm. So I had that floating above experience that everything is amazing. Everything is good. I get it now. I have full access to that experience still, which I think is one of the consistent things about these experiences, is that you have like 99% recall.
You saw yourself leave your actual body, and were you floating in the room? Like, can you just take us there in that moment? What was that like?
It was really in the upper, like the upper corner of the room, observing. So it was in the ceiling and I was up in there, and I was able to see a doorway, a threshold with a hallway. And it was like, oh, that's where I'm going. I get it. And I knew I was going to the other side. I knew it, and it was all good. That's the thing, is that I knew what was happening. It's like, oh, okay, this is what I'm doing, like this. Okay. I never crossed the threshold. Some people do, and they go down a hallway, and there are very, very high correlations between what people see when they have near death. So often there's a light, a tunnel, a thing. You know, you do a review of your
life. Did you actively choose to not cross the threshold, or it just didn't happen?
No. I thought it was all good. But what happened was then I saw my husband and my son walk in the room with red eyes. They were so sad. Aww. And I was thinking, oh no, you don't need to be sad. It's all good. Please don't be sad. Don't grieve this. This is all good. So I was aware of that. I was also aware of this nurse. I could almost maybe point her out.
Wow.
That's how strong I have a sense of her. But she was working very hard. And I heard her speaking with my husband. This kind of brings a little tear, is that he was conveying to her how important I was, in a sense. And I saw her get it. And therefore, she's like, we are going to save this person. I'm going to make this happen. So she had to cut through some kind of loopholes or do whatever to get me transported to UCLA to get a liver transplant, because that's not easy on a drop of a hat to get a liver.
I want to know what your husband said.
I do too. But guess what? You could just talk to him any day and he'll tell you.
Yeah, you'll know. You'll meet him and the way he looks at her. It's so
he has a huge
obvious.
Heart.
Wow.
She is so the sun beautiful. And the moon.
I know. Yes. But what was neat about it, one of the takeaways, is for me to be able to have that experience and to get the divinity that he sees that maybe I haven't been able to see, which is so touching and profound. But therefore, I became, this is the funny angle, I became on behalf of her. I want her to get what she's trying to do. So I was like on her side trying to save me. It wasn't that it's like, I didn't see any of this as a bad thing, but I just saw what was happening. And I had a couple of experiences. I saw this, some kind of an East Asian man. I don't know. He had a goatee. He was older, wearing robes. And he just represented wisdom, and he presented himself. So he has been a character I've been able to connect with and refer to. And he's nonverbal for the most part. So it's just that transmission of wisdom feeling. Mm. So he's been really important in my development.
Oh, you currently, since then. Do you currently connect with this being, or this is just in that moment?
Yeah. No, since then. Wow. Absolutely. So this was all 2019. And then what I would say the hard realization came where, I mean, it's amazing what the liver does. Like my blood was so thin, it was running all over the place and I had no brains. Wow. And, you know, I would hear the question and try to form an answer and I couldn't get it out. So anyway, the liver's in charge of a lot of things. But what it also is an organ that fully regenerates itself.
Whoa.
So it can come back
completely.
Those cells regenerate themselves. Yeah.
Wow.
Look it up, but it's like the whole thing could regenerate in some unbelievably not that long period of time. But so the point is I started to heal with the help of friends. I actually was able to see light when I was in that ICU room, which, by the way, that ICU room through meditation, prayer, whatever, became this glowing, just healing temple. It was the most glorious space. It wasn't like, ew, I'm in this gross place. No. It was glowing.
Are you is your physical body unconscious during all of this?
I had some consciousness in and out. I definitely did. And then, you know, like I remember being transported. I remember arriving. I remember friends being there because it was Rosh Hashanah and they were in LA for Rosh Hashanah. So Rosh Hashanah has been become important to me, that rebirth.
And it's a rebirth.
Time.
Yeah, it's the new year.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know, and I know nothing much, but it's important to me and I want to learn more. So I was there. I saw this kind of bright light. It was like, oh, there's this bright light. And I thought, oh, shoot, I wonder if that's bad. I wonder if that means I'm going to pass out. I've never passed out. So I thought, oh, I wonder what that means. And I sort of stayed with it. It's like, no, I'm not passing out. Nothing's happening. And then I got it. It was like, this is prayer. People are praying for me. I can see it. I could see it. Because I was in that kind of thin between the veils experience. And later it was confirmed. There were several groups of people that some I knew, some I did not even know that were praying. And I could see it. I could feel it.
Wow. That gave me a moment of pause too, that I'm not very religious, or I hesitate using the word pray or prayer, but I do like to send good healing energy and good vibes. And now I'm curious, you know, I always think it can't hurt.
Real.
Yeah. That's really beautiful to hear that.
And in fact, Lynn McTaggart wrote a book called Power of Eight. And I do a Power of Eight group every Wednesday where we take turns who is the recipient to receive the prayer, meditation, intentions of our group.
Wow. Oh, I love that.
Because I know it's true. And she actually scientifically proved it's true. So the power of prayer is true. So the Power of Eight,
We'll link that in our show notes, guys, if you're interested in reading it. Yeah.
So then they sent me home because things were turning around. And when we drove onto the ranch and we came around the bend, Maury, you know this, when you come around with that beautiful lake and where the home site is, I burst into tears with this overwhelming love, gratitude, and recognition.
Wow.
Of this place, of this energy, of this entity, of this being that I believe really is just like Mother Earth. This is where I know it. This is where I connect with it. I feel the tears like when I talk about it, that I didn't even realize that moment how significant that was. I just thought, oh yeah, and then I burst in and I was overwhelmed. No, that was something in my recognition. So then I spent the next period of time healing, and I healed rapidly. Within 3 weeks, all of my liver enzymes were normal and remain so since. But I started to really do a lot of Qigong practice.
Everybody loves
and
Qigong.
Tai Chi practice.
Yeah.
Meditation and literally wandering in nature here on the ranch. So that's what I wanted to do. And I just felt so connected. It was like I would have these conversations non-verbally, sometimes verbally, with the trees, with the plants, with the animals. And it just was this thing. And it was so beautiful. And after about 6 months, I was standing there and I thought, I feel, you know, I'm pretty well, I'm healed. I wonder what the next move is for me. I was doing climate work out in the community, trying to do, you know, gathering community entities, different groups together to talk about climate change. And I thought, I wonder what my next move is. And I heard climate change is an inside job. I was like, what the heck's that? And I was like, oh, so I've just healed myself. And if I'm not healed, how can I possibly bring anything else to the rest of the world? If I'm out of balance, if I'm inflamed, if I'm depleted, that's exactly what I bring to the world, to every minute of the world, to every space I walk into. So I was like, oh my God, that's so profound. And then I thought, well, then what's my next move? And I thought, oh, the land that I live on, that's my next move. I live here. This land and I are in reciprocal relationship. If it's depleted, we got trouble.
Were you farming? Were you already farming at this point on the land, or were you just ranching?
That's a good question. And I could have introduced that notion. My husband bought this ranch in 1979.
Oh, wow.
Elwood Canyon Ranch. And he planted avocados here. And so he has been farming for, you know, 40 something years.
Wow.
So when we got together, we lived here. Our two children were born here.
Wow.
Major, major rituals and important things have happened here. So I've felt connected to it for a very long time. But we raised our family after that. We raised them in Montecito, which is about 20 minutes south.
Right.
But we always came here. It was always an important space for me. But I was never part of the farming aspect.
Oh.
You know, I would hear it. This,
right.
You know, but gentleman farming. We moved here and suddenly I just got so curious. So I started to ask questions and more questions and more. And then I studied permaculture at Quail Springs. And then I started to read books. And then I started to learn about regenerative farming. And I'm telling you, from that point on, it has been a passion. And every bit as much learning and as much of a uphill climb as any PhD, you know? So that's technically the journey that got me here.
I feel like it's so aligned with Maury's work, is that you really cleared out all of the bullshit and got back to who you are, and you were able to hear more clearly what you needed to do to move forward. I love that for you.
Well, and what a beautiful story and allegory of, you know, your body showing you how regenerative it can be when you feed it with the things that it truly needs organically. And that, you know, how fucking magical is the universe that your purpose is to do this for the land. And so you had to go through such an intense, terrifying experience that ended up being so enlightening, that was such a perfect parallel to your purpose.
Wow.
I mean, I there are so many stories like this, but yours is so specifically parallel that it is truly, I think, for any of us struggling with the harder times in life, with the things that feel like, why me? You could have easily been in that headspace.
Right.
Why me? How did I end up here? Why am I the one with liver failure after taking, you know, supplements? That instead of that headspace,
did you always
really
have that level of openness?
Channeled it into your purpose.
Or do you feel like it came specifically from this event and this moment in time?
I would say I have been a curious, open person, but this was a tidal wave of openness.
Wow.
You know, I had a lot of help. And what I want to say is it wasn't terrifying for me. It was terrifying for my loved ones.
Right.
Friends and family. And that's what's interesting, is I was also given a peek at what that, I mean, we all love life. We all love living. Nobody wants to go, oh yeah, I'm totally cool with death. But some cultures do. So if you're looking at nature as your wisdom teacher, guess what? Death and decay and renewal. I mean, that's what we're doing. It's mm-hmm. all about more green, more cover crops that you let then die, decay, enrich, rot, and enrich the land. And that cycle that allows and it attracts more nutrients, mm-hmm. allows the soil
right.
microbiome to thrive. It's like you start to get into an understanding of we're nature, and this is, and then it can help you relax in little bitty ways.
Like what way? That's a really great takeaway right there. What ways?
I mean, I think I walk around with a thought that's too available to me of something's wrong. What's wrong? I have to be vigilant in some way, you know? And, you know, we could hypothesize how I got there, but I don't think I'm alone on that one.
No.
And I also think we resist the notion of death, even many deaths, so that ego loss, you know, the loss of ego in any situation where I have to actually open up and shift my mindset mm-hmm. and let my worldview change by opening and allowing more in. That's a mini death. We don't like it in our culture.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable.
And you're really a baller winner if you can really argue better and fight mm-hmm. better and intellectualize and all that. And that was some of my pursuit back in the day. It's like education, knowledge, I want to have it all. And that's where the truth lies. And what Taoism teaches. And so every single morning I am a student and I read the Tao Te Ching a little bit and I practice, because the point is that nature loves an empty vessel. It will fill it. So if you walk around full all the time, nature's going to pass you by. That's one of the notions. But also what I want to say, the Buddhism that I've been studying for many years with a teacher named Tenzin Wangyal, who is a Bun Buddhist, is basically what Mori taught me. So the more recent shift came when my good friend Jennifer told me, I've met this woman, I think you're going to love her. Mm. And I just had a like, oh yeah, I'm calling her. So I did. And we started working a year and 3 months ago to the day, not to be exact.
Wow.
But anyway.
Good memory.
Yes.
Happy anniversary-ish.
And what I think you brought me was my whole, the holistic view, which is my view for others. It just wasn't my internal understanding. So that all aspects of myself are there for a reason and are to be loved. And you help me identify, oh, that's that young one. Oh, that's that character. What does she need? And what was her pain or wound? How do we bring her into the room? But also the holism of, Stacy, you're intuitive. Just own it. And that was a struggle for me, wasn't it? Right.
Yes, very much so. For a lot of us. But you had the same thing I had, which is people are going to think I'm crazy if I own it. And you're very intuitive. Well, you're very, very intuitive. So it's not just sort of. And I think that it's powerful in you. And I think that we all have this fear that it's going to make us seem nuts.
Or dangerous.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, I think that you are so full of gifts that I appreciate any part of helping you see that in yourself. We could literally talk to you for 5 more hours, but we can't keep you that long.
I know, I have a lot of more questions.
I know. I have one last question for you. You know, our goal in this podcast, the goal of this podcast is to really help our listeners reconnect to that inner wisdom and ultimately to their truth, and to live in this freedom of being in total alignment with what that truth is and embodying that truth. So how would you say that this, you know, climate change being an inside job, this idea of regenerative living as a practice, and also then the way that that connects us to an earth that can regenerate itself, how does that allow people access to truth and freedom in their own lives?
in order to be a balanced person in harmony, that's the basic goal of nature, is to have balance, is that I need, besides my 8 hours of sleep and 2 hours of eating and that kind of thing, I need a minimum of 2 more hours a day in sacred, nourishing, restful, replenishing time. Now, that is a tall order in this culture. That takes literal discipline. So it is not a small thing. Literally, I feel that if I am accomplishing that every day, I am doing my part without recycling, you know, without practicing regenerative farming on the outside. Anything I do on the outside is a bonus. But really, if you could accomplish that one thing, and really, I mean, in Taoism, they call it yin and yang. So the yin is like that really resting, holding, spacious, nourishment, that we are a yin depleted society and culture. So that is the big number one. Mm-hmm. And then number two, what happens is if you really practice that, it becomes a mindset. And that's the effort. That's what I'm doing with my Instagram account, with my podcast, with when I speak publicly or whatever, if I write a newsletter. I'm really trying to share my understanding of a regenerative mindset that starts with me, and but it carries out into every single choice point in my day, big and small. So that's why you becoming empowered with learning how to do housework or paint a step or whatever you're doing at that small level, that is feeding you. It's filling you. It makes you feel satisfied. Practicing kindness, thinking about my wholeness. And I mean, love is the only thing that heals. I had a huge dream that told me that. And it was disappointing because I really thought I was going to get there intellectually. But it's like, love is the only thing that heals.
Beautiful. I love that. Stacey, where can people find all of this amazing work that you're doing?
That's a great question. My Instagram account is Stacey, S-T-A-C-Y, Pulice, P-U-L-I-C-E. I have a podcast on Apple Podcast and Spotify called Regenerative Spaces, on which you can hear a brilliant interview with you, Maury. I love that interview.
That was such a good conversation. I really loved that interview too.
I think it's coming out in mid-May, correct?
Yeah.
And then I also, you can subscribe on my website, stacypulice.com too. And I send newsletters and there's more things coming. So those are some of the good ways to go.
Beautiful. I can't encourage you guys more to stay connected to Stacey. She really helps to reframe the way that we look at life and our connectedness to something bigger, which is this planet and Mother Nature. And the biggest message that I think you've left me with, Bean, can I do the takeaway this week?
Oh my, I would love that. Let's switch it up.
Is that, thank you. When you see this as an inside job and when you take those 2 hours to give yourself that replenishing time, then your needs are met by you and you're not over-consuming, overreaching, pushing this planet and its resources to fill you more because you're so centered inside yourself and you're then able from that place to be connected to this Mother Nature that is sustaining and supporting us. And from that place, you will take aligned, intuitive, organic action that helps the planet we live on.
Beautifully said.
Wow.
Is that fair?
Really well said takeaway.
Well,
much better
Stacey,
than I could have done, for sure.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for sharing this wisdom and your energy and just your lovely light with us.
Thank you.
I can't wait to just see all the things you're going to do in the world. And this has been such a good conversation. Thank you. We love you.
I love you too. Thank you so much.
Guys, if you want to support this podcast, please share this episode with your friends and family. As always, leave us a review. You can check us out on Instagram at Signal with Maury and Melissa. And we are on YouTube at Signal with Maury and Melissa. So you can actually watch this episode if you want. And we'll see you again next week with another episode. Bye. This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted by me, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Gushka. Special thanks to my production team, Anushree Thekadeth, Arman Kassam, and Anais Islami. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode. See you then.